hard to find in the morning papers. It's hard to find in the magazines. It doesn't matter what show you tune in. It's hard to find on TV screen, but it's on talk radio. Truth is on talk radio. Turn it on, turn it up as loud as it goes. Talk radio. Double talk is all you get, and you wanna hear it straight.
Good afternoon, ladies and gentlemen. This is the National Intel Report. I'm your host, John Stadtmiller. It is Wednesday, ladies and gentlemen, the 21st of March, 2007. And on today's program, I'm very glad that this gentleman, we rescheduled him. He was supposed to be with us last Wednesday. Stephen Hyatt, he is the editor of A Game as Old as Empire. Now, this is the follow-up to The Secret World of Economic Hitmen, and that was John Perkins' book that was done, I do believe, back in the 70s. So we will bring this gentleman up here in just a couple of minutes, and we're going to explain to you folks how this global empire is taking place. What is going on with this, and who is responsible? It's a web of deceit. It is globalization. It is hijacking of sovereignty. It is many, many different things. There's so many facets to this, ladies and gentlemen. I guarantee you this is going to be a fascinating hour or two. I think we have this gentleman, Mr. Hyatt, scheduled out for 2 hours. We will be able to take phone calls. And to let you know, he is a professional editor and writer, but also has a long history of being an activist. He went on his first demonstration for City Equal Housing Ordinance in Des Moines back in 1965. He went on to edit an underground newspaper, was active in the movement against the Vietnam War, and then became a community college teacher and teachers union organizer. After moving to California, he worked for a number of years at Stanford Research Institute, a think tank for consultancy organizations serving multinational corporations and government agencies, and closely linked to Bechtel, Chevron, Bank of America, and other players in the EHM world. There he edited a series of research reports circulated to global Fortune 1000 companies advocating standard neoliberal nostrums such as public-private partnerships and offshoring. He left SRI in 1987 and has since produced and edited books for a lot of different people, folks. The New Press and other publishers, working with authors such as Alexander Cockburn, Mike Davis, Louis H. Lapham, I do believe that's Lapham, Christian Parenti, Rebecca Solnit, and he is the co-editor with Mike Davis of Fire in the Hearth, The Radical Politics of Place in America. He lives in San Francisco and is currently president of Edit Cetera, a nonprofit Bay Area cooperative of publishing professionals. Ladies and gentlemen, this guy's been there, seen it from the inside. These are the people that we like to bring forth that have the courage to tell exactly what's going on and, more importantly, who's involved. And I guarantee it's going to be a fascinating program, so stick around on this thing. We'll take the break here in a couple of seconds, and we'll be back on the other side with my guest today. Very happy to have him, Stephen Hyatt. We'll be right back. We've all considered solar power at one time or another, and self-sufficiency will be your key to a better future. Ken Solar can help you get off the grid and become self-sufficient with solar power, and for a lot less than you would think. One of Ken's most popular items right now is the new solar power generator, for a lot less than you'd expect. This portable system can chop off nearly a third of your electric bill, a good start for any families out there wanting to get solar power for your home. Visit Ken's website at kensolar.com for free downloads, free videos, and how-tos, and of course, the new solar power generator. Use the coupon code RBN with your purchase and save an additional 10% off your order. Get a solar power generator now from kensolar.com at 239-677-3073. Again, that's 239-677-3073 or on the web at kensolar.com. Ken Solar, the home of all your solar needs.
You got headaches? Most headaches are caused by a structural weakness of blood vessels in the head, and the blood vessels are tending to balloon, causing a headache. The structural weakness is due to a deficiency. Correct the deficiency, and the body will heal itself. I blended what I believed to be the missing nutrients in the right proportions, and the headaches went away. When they were gone, they stayed gone. I named it Headache Stay Gone. See HeadacheStayGone.com or call 800-327-0727 for more information or to place an order. I'll send you a bottle of Headache Stay Gone. Headache Stay Gone will cure your headaches and prevent them from coming back before you pay the bill. Headache Stay Gone has already cured the worst migraines I have ever heard of. Call 800-327-0727. All orders are shipped the same day. Call 800-327-0727. That's 800-327-0727.
Sit back, relax, and enjoy a vacation to the beautiful Ozark Mountains. Howard Creek Resort is nestled conveniently between the cities of Bull Shoals and Mountain Home on Bull Shoals Lake in the natural state of Arkansas. Howard Creek Resort offers easy access to excellent fishing and water recreation of all types. The excitement of nearby Branson music shows and Silver Dollar City is accented perfectly by the many attractions located here in the heart of the Ozarks. Horseback riding, water skiing, scuba diving, hiking, caves, and rock climbing are just a few of the many activities that are available to do in our area. Howard Creek Resorts offers it all. Whether you're staying for the weekend or for a month, Howard Creek Resorts is the place to be, an excellent place to stay, and a valued traditional family vacation resort. Visit our website at www.howardcreek.com or call 1-877-253-7690. Come visit us for a lifetime of memories.
Get ready for Real Talk Radio. You're listening to the National Intel Report with your host, John Stadtmiller.
All right, ladies and gentlemen, we are back. I have, as I said, with me, Stephen Hyatt, the editor of A Game as Old as Empire. Good afternoon, Mr. Hyatt. How are you this afternoon?
Hi, John. I'm fine. How are you?
Well, we're hanging in there, my friend.
Good.
We're looking at the very strange world that's been cooked up by these globalists. We're witnessing the corporatization of the entire planet, and it's like the unholy triad, the unholy trio. We have corporations connected with the governments and then also with the international banksters, and we're being held hostage. The gun's at our head, the trigger's being pulled, the hammer's already been cocked. And things are not going, though, real well, Stephen, with the globalist plan. There's a lot of flack going around the world. People are finding out about the New World Order, and they're not happy about it. More and more Americans, millions of Americans, are finding out about the global empire, the plan. We're seeing it firsthand here, at least in the hardware section down here in Texas, Steve, with the Trans-Texas Corridor and their wonderful NAFTA highway. And, of course, we had George Bush last year with Vicente Fox and the Prime Minister of Canada making the security and prosperity agreements. They think they're going to keep us all safe from the tip of South America to the northernmost part of Canada. When we can't even secure our own borders, these people are going to make us all safe from terrorists.
I think that what we're finding as we go through this book and the contributors to it would agree that many people are waking up. For every economic hitman, for every multinational corporation, for every global venture, you have community groups, you've got projects around the world who are waking up trying to figure out what is the best way to respond, both in terms of their immediate situation and how to link up with other people around the world who are in a similar situation. The writer, you know, Jeff Tho, talks about what he calls the Party of Davos, which is kind of shorthand for the elites who meet in Davos, Switzerland, in the World Economic Forum each year, where you get, you know, global bankers, high government officials and former officials, people from the IMF, the World Trade Organization, the World Bank, and so forth, meeting to schmooze, tell war stories, and undoubtedly cook up a few business deals and other kinds of deals on the side. On the other hand, you have other people meeting in the World Social Forum around the world. It's been in Mumbai, it's been in Brazil, it's been held in several different places, as well as regional forums of the same kind. There's one coming up, in fact, in Atlanta, Georgia, this year in the United States this summer. And these are people of all, from all you know, walks of life. They're farmers, they're small business people, they're trade unionists, they're teachers, health professionals, environmentalists, you know, you name it. But they're people who's have found themselves on the receiving end, as you were just saying, the guns pointed, the hammers cocked. They've been getting it, and they decided they're not going to take it anymore. They're trying to figure out what's the response. We have a more globalized world. The technology has brought us closer together. But what, that's been largely on the plans for globalization have been defined by these elites for their benefit, even though we're constantly preached to that this is, you know, going to be better for all of us. Many people from their own experience find that's just not so. They're looking down the road and they're seeing that most of the rest of us, whether we're living in the United States or, as we write about in the book, in the Philippines or Nigeria, certainly Iraq, Indonesia, that we're all involved in a race for the bottom. We're scrambling at each other to be the, you know, the person who benefits in this new world order, and we're constantly being played off against each other. The beneficiaries are relatively small group of elites around the world, both in the wealthy countries of the first world, and their partners in the third world. So I think what we're finding is that people are waking up, and it's going to become harder and harder for these guys to sell what they have. People are just not buying it anymore.
Well, they have their associated problems right now, and right now here in the United States, we're facing some serious problems. One thing that has popped up just recently, and we've talked about this extensively on this program, is that, well, we've got mortgage defaults out there. And according to Newsday.com, folks, you want to dial that up, Newsday.com, and take a look at their crisis looms for entire country, this entire economy. And if you're watching very closely, if you're watching the world's markets, they're not in real good shape. And I had Bob Chapman, the international forecaster. He does a newsletter. This guy's former intelligence. He knows Wall Street inside and out. He watches the social and economic happenings around the world. And we were talking about this yesterday, about the mortgage defaults. And they're downplaying this. I cannot believe what they're doing with this, Steve, to try to disinform or basically lie to the American people about these subprime lenders and how dangerous this really is. For instance, Chris Dodd was on CNBC the other day, and he said, oh, yeah, there's 2.2 million subprime mortgage borrowers out there at the risk of defaulting. And he said, but it's okay. It's only going to cost the government $164 billion if we've got to go in there on a bailout. Newsday.com is putting it at a multi-trillion dollar level, and we have it at least minimally tacked to $1 trillion to $1.3 trillion. And if we remember the savings and loan bailout that we had to go through, and it was put right at the doorstep of the American people and the taxpayers out there, we are in serious trouble here. We're watching this global empire. It's got its cracks, and it's not looking real, real good for them. And it's literally a race against time on this. This economy, we've lost 97-98% of the value of the dollar. We are looking at least, minimally, 71 to maybe as possibly $100 trillion that the government has financially obligated us to. But we're also, Stephen, looking at the world itself. And the United States has got it right now. Aside from anything else that's going on, we've got to borrow a couple billion dollars a day just to keep this thing flying. And nobody wants to deal in our dollars anymore. It is a sad situation.
Back in 2003, when the U.S. went into Iraq, George Bush reassured everybody, we're not going in for the oil, we're not going in for the resources, we don't seek an empire. And he might have been a little embarrassed because some of his supporters in this project, people like Charles Krauthammer and Niall Ferguson, said, you know, you're wrong, Mr. Bush. America really is an empire, and it's time to admit that, come clean about that, and act accordingly. Now, from our point of view, me and the contributors to this book, I think I had a little wrong, because I think what we're looking at in terms of empire is not simply a U.S. empire or an American empire in the same vein as the British Empire, the classic empires of the 19th century. What we're looking at is really a global empire. You can look on it as a condominium with elites centered in the major centers of the United States, the money centers, L.A., New York, and so on, and their counterparts in the European Union, Japan, and so on, hooked into their subordinate clients in Mexico, Brazil, and around the world in the developing countries. And what we're looking at really is that these people are, despite, you know, all the flag waving that their politicians will do, and all the professions of patriotism and so on and so on, what they're really doing is abstracting their fortunes from any connection with really the rest of us, the rest of their fellow citizens. They're basically bailing on the rest of us and segregating themselves and their, you know, their gated compounds and secured by their private armies. And they're basically running the world from a very, very narrow point of view. One of our authors, John Christensen, who has a interesting history, he's a guy who had a kind of a parallel career to John Perkins. John Christensen was an offshore banker for a number of years. He got into the business, and it's a very seductive lifestyle. He was working on the Isle of Jersey, one of Britain's Channel Islands, great lifestyle. He was an advisor to the government. It's an offshore, you know, tax haven. But he decided to get out because he realized, you know, what he was doing, what he was a part of, what the impacts were on people around the world. But he found out a lot about how the offshore system works. And one of the things our listeners, many of them who may have read Confessions of an Economic Hitman, one of the differences between the world that John Perkins worked in as an EHM in the 1970s and today is the tremendous growth of the offshore banking industry. John Christensen reports that one-third of all the wealth in the world is held in secret offshore accounts in these tax havens. What that means is that the rest of us, whether we're living in Argentina, whether we're living in Texas, are left to pay the bills, because the people who actually should be contributing their fair share to finance the national budget and to invest in our countries have bailed on us. They're holding their money offshore in the Cayman Islands or Jersey or wherever, where it's largely being, you know, flown around the world in speculative ventures rather than being used to invest in productive investments in goods and services. And again, we're left to pay the bills, because when they don't pay their fair share, you and I and our listeners have to do that. Or else we find that there's no money for the things that we need, the schools, the housing, be fixing the roads and on and on.
Stephen,
we're told it's not there.
Stephen, we've got to take this break. We'll be right back, ladies and gentlemen, with my guest today. Very happy to have this gentleman on board with us today, Stephen Hyatt. We'll be right back. How are you preparing ahead for the events in the future? In the near future, we know there will be those of us that will not be able to buy or sell. Stoves & More wants to help give you the freedom from the systems of the world and from skyrocketing fuel prices. Stoves & More is a dealer for all Amish-built wood cook stoves that will give you an independence you need to cook and bake your food, dry fruits and vegetables, heat your whole house water system, and heat your home. These state-of-the-art cook stoves are nothing like Grandma's old stoves. They have large, airtight, efficient fireboxes that give you an all-night burn, easily heat up to 2,000 square feet. Whether or not you're off the grid, we have products for you from stoves to Staber washers and 12 and 24 volt refrigeration. At Stoves & More, we have the perfect products to complete your preparations. To the first 10 people who purchase a stove, we'll send a free copy of our newly released DVD, Getting Started with Wood Cook Stoves. Stoves & More offers the best selection at the lowest prices on the web, so visit us at www.stovesandmoreonline.com. That website again, stovesandmoreonline.com.
Hi, Steve Shank, Fearless Task Force. Sure, you've got a mortgage and credit cards. Your debt creation is probably the smartest thing you've ever done. How would it be to find $75,000, $150,000, $200,000 or more you never knew you had? Now the Task Force has strategies to make these debts into virtual savings accounts. Ben Franklin said, a penny saved is a penny earned. By doing nothing more than you're doing right now, because you've used your credit, the right strategies can make the debt part of your financial life the smartest thing you've ever done. Oh, by the way, your strategies cost you nothing out of pocket. Go ahead and check out the debt elimination scams if you'd like to. You wouldn't take money from a loan shark, so you may not want to give your money to a debt shark. For an understanding of what a financial genius you truly are, call 800-409-5633. On the web, mydebtfreepath.com. 800-409-5633.
Do you know the truth about cancer treatments? Do you realize that with all presently accepted methods, you are not correctly attacking the cancer and you are mostly fighting to survive the treatment? Do you realize that mutilating surgery, burning and poisoning of your entire system are totally unnecessary? But now it's cancer's turn to die with LaserMed Inc. patented methodology. Without cutting, bleeding, drugs, or damaging radiation, we can destroy skin cancer and breast tumors of any size without adverse side effects at our physician's office. Laser technology at its best. For more information, here's the number to call, 702-953-0267. Or visit www.lasemedinc.com on the web. That's www.lasemedinc.com. That number to call again, 702-953-0267.
We are back. My guest today, Stephen Hyatt, editor of A Game as Old as Empire. Ladies and gentlemen, this outlines exactly how these globalists are pulling off what they're doing. And I want to get into the finer points of this. Stephen, we made an agreement with the planet after World War II to have the Federal Reserve as the currency, the reserve currency for the world. Through our reckless spending in Washington, D.C., as I said earlier, that a couple of years ago, it's been at least 4 years, that the Office of Management and Budget, I guess they have to publish this by law. There was a very small paragraph that I read in a local paper here in Texas, and the OMB was saying that, well, the debts and obligations, past, present, and future obligations of the United States government was $51 trillion. And that sailed over everybody's head. There was no reports of this on the news. We start digging into this, and we're finding out, as they always like to do, minimize the impact or soft landing for bad news. We discover that, well, it very well could be maybe up to $100 trillion that our government has spent us into this hole. And, of course, we know the funny money system that you cannot retire a debt with debt currency, we've lost all but 3%, maybe 2% of the value of the dollar. And I think Cleon Skousen, Steve, years ago, said that the maximum shelf life for the funny money system is 100 years. And if we take a look at this, they did the deal here in America last century, 1913, the Federal Reserve Act. We have at least, if this goes on for another 6 years to 2013, I don't think it's going to last that long. But if you look at this, the dollar's lost about a penny every year. No big deal. But collectively, for almost 100 years now, we take a look at our currency, it is absolutely worthless. We have spent ourselves into this economic hole that is beyond belief and beyond recovery. But now we have countries around the world that the United States was selling its debt to, and treasuries and whatever, and now they're holding us hostage. China regularly on a regular basis threatens us. It's economic blackmail. People are worried that China is going to pull the plug and to start demanding their money. And they've got the financial gun to our head, but they're not ready to pull the plug yet because, well, they're enjoying all this business they're doing with America, thanks to our politicians in Washington, D.C., with the most favored nation status for China. And, well, we're just doing great business for China. They're literally building a 21st century military using American dollars for people that are buying goods, the slave labor goods in the box stores such as Wally World or Walmart or what have you. We've lost up to 85% of our manufacturing capacity in this country. We've got up to maybe as many as 40 million illegals in this country right now. We are massively in debt. The economy is teetering on total collapse. And if you watch the Wall Street boys, the pundits for the buy this stock, buy that stock, everything is just hunky-dory, except we've got some problems here. Any comments on anything I just said?
Well, we have some problems here. What we're finding, again, is that this New World Order is not one that benefits massive numbers of people around the world. One of the things we're looking at is that around 1980, almost a generation ago, 27 years ago, half the people in the world lived on less than $2 a day. 27 years later, New World Order, things are supposed to be, as you say, going great. We still find half the people in the world living on less than $2 a day. And as you were pointing out, that $2 buys less today than it did in 1980. That's not a figure that's corrected for inflation. So we see a lot of countries not making very much of any progress. Many of them, in fact, are much worse off today than they were 30 and 40 years ago throughout the developing world. They, too, are drowning in debt that they were encouraged to take on. John Perkins had his role as an economic hitman. His particular role was to induce countries to take on huge development projects. They would borrow the money from U.S. banks, the World Bank, and so on. They would use U.S. and other first-world contractors and buy the equipment. They would be induced to take on much more than they could really handle. They would be told that this was the route to modernity, this was the way to advance, to join the first world. Cynically, as it turns out, because what John Perkins revealed in his book, Confessions of an Economic Hitman, is that he was encouraged to greatly exaggerate the demand for electricity and the amount of money that could be made if you expanded the electricity grid, in this case Indonesia, by a huge amount. The Indonesians took that debt on. Some of those plants, in fact, this was in the early 1970s, have yet to be built. They've been messing around with them for many years, but of course huge debts have been incurred while this has been going on. Just to take that one example, we go on to the Philippines, where under the dictator Marcos, they were told, open up your economy to imports from wherever around the world, globalize, join the global economy. build free trade zones for multinational corporations.
Okay, hold that thought right there. We've got to go to break, Steve. Let's pick up with that right after this break. My guest today, ladies and gentlemen, Stephen Hyatt. We'll be right back.
You're listening to the Republic Broadcasting Network. Because you can handle the truth.
Learn about the new discoveries of MSP research. Find out about the success MDs, dentists, veterinarians, and others are having with Silver 500. Learn secrets to survival, how to detox the liver, gallbladder, and kidneys, and how over 1,100 doctors are treating Lyme disease, hepatitis C, diabetes, respiratory infections, and many more with success thanks to the help of MSP research and Silver 500. Microbiologists have tested our mild silver protein and found Silver 500 to be the most effective treatment for B. subtilis, a subgroup of anthrax. Choose the products in your medical supply wisely. Our doctor's manual has grown to over 600 pages. Give us a call at 1-334-493-0420. That's 1-334-493-0420 and see why doctors in five countries use a dozen products that are manufactured by Dr. Bill McFarland. One more time, that's 1-334-493-0420 or visit our website at www.mildsilverprotein.com/home.html.
Come on, Bill. 2 weeks ago, you were riding a bicycle, and today you're showing up in your new car and telling me you're buying a house? What did you do, rob Bill Gates?
No, John, I didn't rob Bill Gates. What I did do is visit the website www.didyourobbillgates.com. That's where I learned how to make $3,000 to $9,000 each and every week, starting with my very first week. It's a simple program that does all the work for you. I'm already up to $25,000 just going on my third week.
Whoa. What was that website again?
It's www.didyourobbillgates.com. Now write this down, John. You should go there and learn how this program can help you become financially independent, too.
Thanks, Bill. I'm going there right now.
Check, please.
You got this one, right, Bill?
Sure, John. Don't forget, it's www.didyourobbillgates.com. Next time, you'll be buying me lunch.
Deal.
Americans who already realize our nation is in deep trouble need special edition hard copy literature to awaken the widest possible spectrum of people to the imminence of our nation's peril. The Artificially Sweetened Times informs people that the artificial sweetener aspartame is a hidden addiction killing people worldwide with a cluster of symptoms we now call Rumsfeld's disease. Find out who's responsible for unleashing this weapon of mass misery on the world and become part of the global movement to eliminate this neurotoxic drug from our food supply. The People's Income Tax Guide cites congressional records, Supreme Court decisions, and newspaper articles at the time to prove conclusively that wages were never intended to be taxed as income. A lot has happened in the world since 9/11. The report of the Citizens Commission on 9/11 disproves the government's explanation of September 11 through a careful analysis of the evidence. The Artificially Sweetened Times, the People's Income Tax Report, and the report of the Citizens Commission on 9/11 are priced for mass distribution. Sample copies are just $3. Call 208-255-2307 or go to idaho-observer.com.
You're tuned in to the National Intel Report, the real talk radio show.
Folks, $500 billion in dirty money flows each year from poor countries into offshore accounts managed by Western banks, dwarfing the amount of those nations received in foreign aid. Source of the money? Tax evasion, kickbacks, capital flight to money laundering, drug trafficking. This is, ladies and gentlemen, this world is literally awash in criminals. Criminals are running the game, and they're untouchable because when you're that big, you control that much, you control everything. Stephen, it almost seems insurmountable, but as I said earlier, the world is waking up. And you remember this years ago, 10 years ago in my particular case, I was always being attacked as being a wing nut or just a disenfranchised person, a conspiracy theorist. That's their favorite term now. No, we turned that on them and called it conspiracy fact. There has been a conspiracy for global government. And the one thing that they really haven't done is be honest with the entire world as what's being set up. we were given the example with the European Union. Oh, that was just all fine and hunky-dory. Well, let's just have one currency. We have George Bush on the second go-around, the global elitist himself, supposedly for empire purposes, that the United States is part and parcel of the formation of the global government. They're talking out of both sides of their mouth, and they're still deriding people that are bringing this to light and shining the searing light of truth on this, and they're losing the game.
Well, I think they are. You know, I was just reading that when the NAFTA treaty came up, some people were, from a number of different points of view, were lobbying against it, and they were trying to reach their senators saying, you know, have you read this? And it's like, you know, 20,000 pages, right? Nobody who was voting on it had actually read it. They were, you know, Tom Friedman admitted, you know, he saw the words free trade on something and he was for it, even if he didn't know what it actually was. Well, they reached one of the Republican senators from Colorado, Hank Brown, who took their challenge and said, okay, I'm going to read through this. And he read through a lot of it, and he said, you know, my God, this is not what I've been told it's supposed to do. It's very far from that, and he ended up voting against the NAFTA treaty. Unfortunately, not enough of his colleagues took the same route. Some of them might have been persuaded. But these are things that are not really plans that are not really presented in a straightforward way to people so that they can have the opportunity to really decide, is this going to work for us in the way that it's really planned to do? We can see the kinds of revolts against this when European Union had its votes on a new constitution a couple of years ago. It was voted down in a number of countries, including France and several others, as part of a backlash because people knew that they had been lied to about various aspects of the European Union. It's not necessarily that they're against all aspects of it, but they're very clear about what they call over there the democratic deficit. That is, that you have ministers meeting in Brussels who make all the decisions. They're appointed by governments. The European Central Bank is in turn indirectly appointed by central bankers who are really autonomous from the electorate. And they run things largely to please themselves and their clientele without much say-so from people. There's a very powerless European Parliament that meets, so there are elections for that, but it doesn't really have much oversight to anything. It doesn't really form a government. So you have kind of the worst of both worlds. You've got a structure that's taking decisions that reach far into people's lives, businesses, communities, certainly shaping the economic system that allows them to get a living. But those decisions are not really up for discussion or debate, certainly not for election. So people are obviously angry about that, and there's certainly a backlash against it. Sometimes it's, you know, it can turn destructive, as when people, you know, turn against you know, immigrants or others who are unlike them, other ethnic groups. But you know, the lack of a positive response is certainly, you know, part of the problem because of, again, the dishonesty that this project has been framed in.
It's amazing. You know, you mentioned that we had NAFTA, and that was sold to the American people, and you're absolutely correct. These politicians, I call them the Congress critters, they have a responsibility, an absolute responsibility, to understand exactly what they're voting for. And we had a very interesting election cycle back in 92. We had Daddy Bush that was the incumbent. We had the new kid on the block, Bill Clinton. But we had something else thrown in there. He was using his own money, and that was Ross Perot. It made it very, very interesting in the 92 elections. And many people blamed Ross Perot for actually getting Bill Clinton elected. But if you take a look at the transfer, I call it the transfer of power, George Bush Sr. was looking very, very much like a non-incumbent. He didn't look like the president of the United States. He looked like a bumbling fool. He looked at Bill Clinton. Here was this young guy, governor from Arkansas. He was sharp. He was good-looking. Hey, he had it down pat, and there's that little guy, Ross Perot, with the floppy little ears, saying, you know, you hear that giant sucking sound? That's your job's going to Mexico. He had part of the puzzle there. He knew about the globalism project, but he didn't go far enough with this. Mexico, for a lot of these companies, was just a stopover point until they could solidify their deals and move most of this manufacturing over to China. And I've always said this, Stephen, if you're a company, a corporation, you have an obligation to your shareholders, you're a corporation, your bottom line is money, and all that's fine and dandy if that's the game that you want to play. But the problem is that the deck has been stacked against us. And I said this, if a company wants to, Ford Motor or General Motors or whomever, wants to go over to China, open up plants, start making products to develop for that new market over there, that's fine and dandy. But to allow these people to ship their goods back into this country with no tariffs, no nothing, there's unfair competition. We're being told that we can't compete in the global market unless we get really down and dirty and nasty about this. But look at what they're doing. NAFTA, we were told by the politicians in Washington, D.C. that, well, this is going to level the playing field with our friends to the south, with Mexico. It didn't do that, because what level playing field are we talking about? Were we talking about upping the standard of living for the Mexican people down there? This is the way it was sold. What they were really saying, we're going to level the playing field. We're going to make you just like Mexico here in this country. And then we see the borders left wide open. We're talking about amnesty for these up to 40 million. It's somewhere between 30 and 40 million. There's a lot of foreigners in this country right now. And this is part of the multiculturalism that is taking place. I mean, it's like the latter-day babble that we can't communicate with half the people in this country anymore because they're not speaking our language. This is all part of the process. But, you know, we had NAFTA. That went in 1992. Then we had CAFTA. Then last year we had George Bush and the boys sign on to the Security and Prosperity Agreements. The game is afoot to make the North American Union that will eventually be melded together with the European Union. And, well, there are certain stages we have to go through to have our global governance. And as I said earlier, a lot of people are catching on to this thing. Even our own legislature here in Texas, Stephen, I don't know if you knew this or not, but the politicians have been slapped awake down here. People down
must
here
must take some doing.
Well, it does. You got to do a lot of slapping to wake up these guys. But it looks like there's going to be a 2-year moratorium until these legislatures can figure out what to do with this Trans-Texas Corridor plan, the okay. NAFTA highway.
I'm recalling back in 1979 at the height of the inflation around the Iran oil boycott, and you know, Jimmy Carter was in, and there were, you know, gas lines and high inflation, and Paul Volcker was the head of the Federal Reserve at that time, and he testified before Congress about the economic situation, which we all agree was certainly, you know, difficult for people. And what he said, this was his recipe. He said, the standard of living of the American worker has to fall. That was very interesting. I was working at SRI at the time, and I immediately perked up when I read that, because the standard, this is, you know, because usually politicians, other leaders, you know, they're appearing in public before Congress or at some meeting or press conference, but they're not telling people that their plans are to make the average person's standard of living fall. They're talking about how much better it's going to be down the road, right? This is a guy telling us basically his recipe for how to deal with our economic problems, was to cut people's standard of living. And, you know, basically that has been done. We've seen, you know, an explosion of inequality in the United States. We've gone back to the measures, go back to the 1920s. We're back in that era and heading, you know, farther south on that. So that in the last generation, most people have either seen their standard of living level or declined, in many cases, you know, severely, as, you know, the local plants move to Mexico or China or wherever. And they are left with, you know, scraps and scrambling for jobs and income. A small elite has done extremely well. You know, the average CEO now earns something like 400 times what the worker on the line does. A generation ago, it was something like 20 times. You see that's just an enormous difference. I can't see that the average CEO is working any harder than the average CEO in, say, 1972, but they're certainly getting rewarded in that way.
Well, and but you got to make big salaries when you start to have a brush with the law, and you've got to hire high-dollar attorneys to fend off the dogs that are nipping at your heels. But you're absolutely right, and part of that is, and I'm sure it's the payoff for selling out your country. These transnational corporations, they have no allegiance to their workers, their power base, or from whence they started. They've got absolutely no allegiance to anything except themselves.
Actually, one of our authors, John Christensen, again, was quoting the advisors to various companies around the question of, we were talking about using offshore banking havens to stash money and evade taxes. And basically, these guys said, yeah, that's right, that a corporation has no allegiance to anything or any goal except to make money for the people who run it, the shareholders. And they have no obligation to observe the laws. They have no obligation to any country or community. They have only one obligation, and that's to make as much money as quickly as possible. Well, you can see we talk about the question of values. Where does that come in? If your only value is to make as much money as quickly as possible, obviously then all other values have to go overboard.
Well, it's fascinating. It's often been twisted. Money is the root of all evil. Now, that's not true. Money is the medium of exchange that people do business by. It is the love of money that is evil, and that's what we're seeing these people do. But, you know, I'm sitting here thinking about this, you know, we have Congress critters in Washington, D.C., that just because their predecessors in the 100th Congress or the 98th Congress or whatever it was, wherever this country took the wrong turn, when they are informed of what's going on, it's their duty and obligation to fix the problem that their predecessors created. But they're not doing that. They're sticking their head in the sand. They're trying their best to put on a front, you know, the plausible deniability front. Well, I just didn't know. They have been told. They know exactly what's going on. And I liked what our founders, Steve, I like what our founders said. You know, if it isn't working, just move it a little bit further out west. You know, you have a duty and obligation as being an American. When your government turns on you and it's no longer the government that was instituted in this country, we are not a democracy, ladies and gentlemen. We are a constitutionally limited republic. We are, in their minds, Stephen, we're no longer that. And instead of these people fearing us, the American people, who they supposedly represent, rather than fearing us, we are now in mortal fear of them. This sounds to me like the basis of the great Second American Revolution, if I've ever seen one.
Well, I always liked, you know, Abraham Lincoln's formulation of government of the people, by the people, and for the people as the simplest way to put it. And obviously, you know, there's debate about how to put that into practice, make that work. We've had that for generations through the history of the United States. But that's the core viewpoint that I think most of us hold. And that's something that, despite the ritual, flag waving we hear from George Bush and from his opponents in the Democratic Party as well, they've largely abandoned that. We're not looking at certainly government for the people, now, obviously not by the people, and not really of the people either. So we're going to have to work to get that back.
Well, the hour is late. It's 11:59 on the clock, and when the clock strikes 12 midnight, the lights go out. We were the envy, Stephen, of this entire planet, this government, this great grand experiment, where we, the people, we held the power. We, the obligation and the duty of the government was to make sure that our constitutional rights were not violated. No laws were to be passed, no Supreme Court rulings contrary to the intent of the Constitution. We have looked at a total erosion of this Constitution. It is almost a joke. last year, thanks to Capitol Hill Blue, that somebody was in George Bush's office, and he, as he usually does, in fits of rage, said that we'll find a way around it. Look, the Constitution is just a GD piece of paper. This is our president that swore to uphold and defend this Constitution against enemies foreign and domestic, to make sure, as the chief CEO of this corporation that they created, to look out after the best interests of the American people. And all of these people have done was to sell the American people down the river. George Bush is just the latest installment on this deal. And this is going to continue unless something drastically, at least on the political front, something happens in Washington, D.C., a bolt of lightning out of the blue or an epiphany that, oh, well, we screwed up. We've got to fix this problem. This country is going down the tubes. We're hearing none of this, supposedly, from our elected leaders. Stephen, we are in serious trouble. This grand experiment has, in my estimation, been the finest government ever instituted by men. And these very men are helping to destroy the greatest thing that, in recorded history, that mankind has ever seen. And it's slipping away fast. We got a break here, short segment. We'll put out the call-in number at 800-313-9443. Ladies and gentlemen, I want to hear about your concerns, your passions. What are we going to do to turn these people on their ears and throw these criminals where they belong, in the jails? How are you preparing ahead for the events in the future? In the near future, we know there will be those of us that will not be able to buy or sell. Stoves and More wants to help give you the freedom from the systems of the world and from skyrocketing fuel prices. Stoves and More is a dealer for all Amish-built wood cook stoves that will give you an independence you need to cook and bake your food, dry fruits and vegetables, heat your whole house water system, and heat your home. These state-of-the-art cook stoves are nothing like grandma's old stoves. They have large, airtight, efficient fireboxes that give you an all-night burn, easily heat up to 2,000 square feet. Whether or not you're off the grid, we have products for you, from stoves to Staber washers and 12 and 24 volt refrigeration. At Stoves and More, we have the perfect products to complete your preparations. To the first 10 people who purchase a stove, we'll send a free copy of our newly released DVD, Getting Started with Wood Cook Stoves. Stoves and More offers the best selection at the lowest prices on the web, so visit us at www.stovesandmoreonline.com. That website again, stovesandmoreonline.com.
People who use Cardivite know about the pollutants in our body and want them out. For over 5 years, Cardivite has proven itself time-tested. Here's Dr. Matson, a naturopathic doctor's thoughts on Cardivite.
In our mind, there isn't such a great big mystery to disease anymore. This basic tenet of yeast in the gut and metals in the liver covers at least 70-80% of the diseases that we see. When we do our program, you know, herbal formulas like Cardivite, and you see someone who could barely walk up a hill now going for regular jogs, 3 months later, we know we're doing something right. It's a well-thought-out formula. I mean, the idea of it working on yeast and metals both at the same time and liver function is dead on. You'll find, I think, that it'll work more than just on heart problems and circulation problems. It'll work on other problems as well.
For more information, call 1-877-928-8822 or visit our Cardivite link at rbnlive.com. That toll-free number again, 1-877-928-8822.
Did you ever wonder how an opera singer that hits a high note is able to shatter a wine glass? Well, the glass has a natural resonant frequency. If the resonant frequency making the glass vibrate is powerful enough, the size of the vibration will become so large the glass shatters. Using this same principle, Royal Raymond Rife discovered that disease-causing organisms can be destroyed using different resonant frequencies. The BioSolutions Frequency Instrument uses the same technology for relief or elimination of pain and disease conditions with no side effects. The 2006 BioSolutions Plus is the easiest to operate frequency instrument ever developed. Its easy reference guide will allow you to begin using the instrument within minutes. Customer satisfaction is guaranteed or your money back. Don't just treat symptoms, eliminate the cause. For more information, call BioSolutions toll-free, 1-866-885-6625. That's 1-866-885-6625. Once again, 1-866-885-6625.
Wasn't that the idea when we started out? School, that's what this is, the Constitution
Stephen Hyatt, we have we have criminality problems at the very root of governments, corporations, the global elite, the international gangsters, international banksters, the IMF, the World Bank, its member banks inside the United States. How do you create a new world order? You control the very lifeblood of any country's operations. And that's exactly what they have done. Stephen, this is a subject that is near and dear to everybody that listens to this network, that their freedom and their liberty. Once this is gone, if the globalists get their way and the United States is reduced to third world status, I believe the hope of humanity, freedom and liberty, is going to be gone forever.
Well, I think, you know, that's where what I talked about with the World Social Forum comes in an odd kind of way, because the ideals that we were talking about that went out in 1776 in the Declaration of Independence, that are enshrined in the Constitution, the Bill of Rights, and so forth, been fought over and fought for generations, that those have resonated with people around the world. We find people inspired by those ideals. We look at our own history. In 1776, we decided we did not want to be a subordinate part of the British Empire anymore, ruled to basically to funnel wealth back to London. We decided to strike out on our own and to determine our own destiny. And so we shouldn't be surprised, therefore, if other people around the world have the very same idea, that they want to rule their destiny, define what it is, how to develop their economies and their societies and govern themselves. But many people, you know, finding the American ideals of liberty and democracy, you know, extremely powerful. So I think we have a lot of allies around the world, actually, that want not only us to maintain our freedoms, but who want to achieve similar kinds of things for themselves in their own countries. And so I think we're not alone in this.
We definitely aren't alone. The European Union, the members over there, the citizens of the respective countries are finding out how they've been zoomed. Germany right now is not really happy. There is talk about returning to their own currencies in their respective countries, like, say, with France, you get back to the franc, the Deutschmark in Germany, the lira in Italy. It goes on and on. The globalists have planned this thing out. They have been, and again, folks, don't ever misunderstand when I say that, you know, in a way that you have to admire their tenacity and their long-term goals and plans, because they have put together a masterpiece. And they have a short window here. Their enemy right now, Stephen, is time. The more time that goes by in the North American Union, South and Central and North America, Canada, United States, they got to bring that under that umbrella, the North American Union, to marry it up with the European Union. They'll be well on their way. And, of course, we'll be demonstrated the inequities between the two systems, and they'll come up with their plan for global currency, a one currency, and well, we've got to do away with these troublesome upstart people that are demanding things, archaic ideas such as self-determination and self-control. Oh, no, those are things of the past, ladies and gentlemen. What they're cooking up is, well, one pattern's going to fit all for everybody. The deeper you go down this rabbit hole, the less attractive it looks. And that's exactly, as I said, what people are doing. Hang on, folks. We've got to take the top of the hour break. Hour two of the National Intel Report coming up. We'll open up the phone lines at 800-313-9443. Need to hear from you today, folks. We got an exciting guest here. We'll be right back.